Blog Talk Radio.
Radio Network. The World Transformed is an audio production of Speculist Media. You can find us online at worldtransformed.com. This program explores a convergence of emerging technologies and emerging possibilities which are at the heart of this, the greatest period of transformation in human history. Our world is changing in ways that are difficult to predict, sometimes even difficult to imagine. The World Transformed is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in helping to bring about. We're not here so much to tell you about the future as we are to encourage you to think about your future and to consider what may be the biggest transformation of them all, the one that will occur in your life, in your world, the one that begins with recognizing and acting on the vast possibilities that are unfolding before you and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does that amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I'm super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great. Doing good.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Is it hot down there in Louisiana?
Well, you know, yeah, it is. It's not brutally hot yet.
Last week in June in Louisiana, that's kind of a dumb question, I suppose, huh?
Well, by most people's standards, it's going to be warm. If you're not used to Louisiana, you're going to find it quite warm here. But it really gets brutal in August, and that's when, you know, it's not unusual for about half the month of August to have temperatures in excess of 100 degrees, and with humidity, which is makes it worse. So we get pretty darn hot in August, and we're not there yet. And so we're just having a great summer here. And
we're having a bit of a heat wave here, although it's been known to get hot, even hotter than this. It's hit 95 just about every afternoon or so, and so I'm getting up, but we don't have the humidity, right? So it's dry heat. It can still be pretty oppressive. So I've got this thing where I try to get up early in the morning and go ride my bicycle in the summer because it's just perfect. And if you get up just at the right time and the sun's coming up and the mountains and, you know, hey, it's great stuff. Well, yesterday I had too many things to do in the morning and I couldn't get it going. And then I was going to do it fairly early in the morning. Then I was going to do it around noon. And I ended up going about 4 o'clock in the afternoon yesterday. And, you start out, and we're in this little creek valley here, and then you start heading up, and suddenly you're out in the sun, and you're on this dusty trail, and it's like 97 degrees, and you're pulling this 6% grade. And let me tell you, I'm not doing that again. That's the last time you'll be hearing that I went out at that time of day in that kind of heat and tried to pull that feed off. Just a little safety tip, everybody. Don't do that.
Yeah,
okay?
it's important, and I hope you're carrying water with you. That's
of course, yes. Well, I would have turned back much sooner if I didn't have water with me. Yeah, that's always when you're moving at altitude and in the summer especially. Yeah, you got to keep hydrated for sure.
We had it was a couple of years back. We had a late summer camp out. I believe it was like late July, early August, and so we camped out, and then we decided we're going to knock out a distance hike. Okay, so obviously, guys, it's hot. It's going to probably hit 100 today, and make sure you have enough water, whatever amount of water you think you need, take that and double it. Well, it still wasn't enough, Bill. We went on a 10-mile hike, And we were probably on about mile number 6 or 7, and I really became concerned. We had a couple of kids that just weren't going, you know, were not doing well. I mean, I was, quite frankly, I was not doing all that great. And you know, basically at that point, I'm giving up, you know, the last of my own water, and a lot of the adults were doing that just to allow the kids to continue to, you know, to be safe at that point. And so the adults started suffering. It was pretty bad. So when, you know, that was my one experience in my life with real danger, heat associated danger. And I can tell you, that is not good, not fun, and I'm not going to do that again. We just took on too much.
Yeah, well, I don't know that I was ever in any danger yesterday. I just felt like, because at any time, all I had to do was turn the bike around, and then it's all downhill, mostly, right?
Right.
And it's like, all I got to do is steer. But when I got home, I was just like, oh, I can't do any, you know, I just have to sit here for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
You know, I just sat down and I'm like, that's it. I'm completely.
You had nothing left to do anything else the rest of the day. Yeah,
that's right. I was done, you know, but anyway, all that's to say, let's be careful with the heat and let's live to see a future where we're more heat resistant. I that's not even on my list, but we got a fun show tonight. We're having a little fun with my sign-on and sign-off phrase, which is also the tagline for The Speculist and for Speculist Media, which is live to see it. And we talk about the fact that there's good things that are coming our way in the future, and we need to stick around and be there for those things. So I thought it'd be a great idea to do a program where we talked about, well, what is there to live to see in the future? I mean, we talk about a lot of scenarios around the future, and I thought it would be a good idea to maybe break a few of those down and say, well, what are we actually going to see? What do I hope or expect? I'm going to say expect to live to see. And then I thought I'd take it up a notch and say, let's not just talk about the things that we're going to live to see, but what are the things we're actually going to do? So we're going to talk about some things that we plan to do in our lifetimes, however long that might be. And finally, this is the big one. This is the really philosophical one, which is live to be it. So, what are the things in the future that we think we have some chance of being, or that we have some hope or expectation of actually becoming? And we'll work our way up to that because there's I think there's a lot of things we'll see. We'll see more than we'll do, and we'll do more than we'll be, just because, you know, what you are is kind of this ontological thing, and what you do is limited to you, but what you see is kind of what's going to be happening in the world all around you. So I thought that would be a great place to start, especially since that is the tagline. So does that make sense, Stephen?
It does make sense.
Go through
you know, as the great Quato would tell us, you are what you do. So,
oh, there you go. Yeah. So maybe we don't even need that third category. Which, by the way, I posted this everywhere as a poem. I don't know if you saw that, but I was putting out a little poem. It's like, live to see it, live to do it, da-da-da-da, live to be it. And then someone and I got discussing that maybe live to be it should be the second-to-last line. Then what you finally need is a fourth line that somehow sums up all of transhumanity, post-human, the singularity, the cosmic destiny of humanity. Sum that all up in four syllables, and it has to rhyme with do it. Okay, go.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, you know. That's the thing about poetry. There's always that one line that gets you, you know. But there was one good entry was live to dream it. Michael Darling, our old buddy, chimed in with live, 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 which I thought was pretty good. But still accepting entries on that, by the way. So anybody who wants to enter that, there's no prize other than glory if yours becomes the ultimate line that's used for the poem. So keep those entries coming in. All right, so why don't we jump into this. Stephen, would you like to start? Do you have a thing that you expect or hope to live to see?
Absolutely. I hope to live to see, Phil, the reduction of the price of material goods being reduced to the sum of the value of the information it takes to manufacture it, the energy it takes to manufacture it, and the raw materials. Now, all three of these components will be less than those three things in our present goods. And, of course, there won't be any transportation expense at all, because we'll be making this stuff ourselves on our own 3D printers or even potentially nanofactories that we own. And it's the old information, dirt, and sunlight. You know, sunlight to power the solar 3D printer, and the dirt is the feedstock for it, and then the information to produce anything in the world that you dream of. That's what I would love to see. I live to see that, and I believe that we will.
We got into this. I think was it three weeks ago? We were talking about Radical Abundance, Drexler's new book, and that's right. Say again your formulation that you gave there at the beginning. The cost of any material good is then reduced to the value of the information plus what?
Energy to manufacture it and the raw material, the feedstock.
Okay, whatever you're putting in there. Now, and in fact, that's true today, right? Plus there's some labor component, plus shipping.
There's labor and handling that kills you, right? Yeah, and middlemen and transportation and, overhead of the store where you go to buy it. There's lots of different components that you add, that are added onto that. So if everything is just those three things, then obviously material goods will cost much, much less.
Right.
And the way
it works today is not too far from that. Granted, you've got the logistical components that go into it, but the materials that you make things out of generally are not raw materials. Even if you want to make something, you don't get raw materials. You get previously manufactured component parts, and those cost money because there was all the effort that was put into them. And often they're made of parts, and those cost money because there was effort that was put into them. There was the energy that was put into them. There was the information that was put into them. The fascinating thing, and I think the really radical part of the radical abundance model, is that all gets condensed to, as you said, dirt and sunlight and water, maybe, to whatever you want, right? The cheapest, most widely available raw materials, things that anybody can get their hands on, silicon and carbon and oxygen, you can make an incredible amount of stuff out of that if you're starting at that molecular level and working your way up. So you cut out all the middlemen, all possible logistical fees, charges associated with something, and you go just purely for the whatever it costs me to get that information, which it might be open source, you might get it for free, whatever the energy costs, which by then you've got, nano solar panels that you've already owned, so you're not paying anything for the energy, and the feedstock, which is maybe sand and coal and water or something like that, right? It's like
The good news for the radical abundance fans among us, the good news is the most useful materials in a nanofactory world, if we've got that technology, the most useful materials there are for making stuff are also the most abundant.
As you were saying,
Bill, silicon, carbon. These things can be put together in so many useful ways. Just those two things. And of course, carbon's everywhere, and silicon sands. It's everywhere. Those things would probably be some of the most useful materials you would use in a molecular printer. So, yeah, that is a future I want to live to see.
Live to see it, Stephen. I think you will. I think you're going to live to see that. Okay, well, I've got one. I've kind of done mine in categories where I throw several things that might happen in each of those particular categories. And the first of my categories for living to see is space.
And
under the category of space, I expect to live to see the following. First off, the first manned mission to Mars. I think we will see that happen probably sooner than people are expecting right now. There's talk of it happening in the next 5-10 years, and I think that's not entirely out of the question. Certainly in the next couple of decades that will happen. The first permanent human settlement in space, that's an unknown. I think it will happen again sooner than people are expecting right now, because I think a lot of space related activity is about to ramp up. But when will we have a permanent settlement in space? We don't count the International Space Station as a permanent settlement, right? It's kind of a it's kind of a permanent fixture. I mean, there are people there. It's like a permanent station. But in the same way that nobody goes to Antarctica to live, nobody goes to the space station to live. And until someone has their home there, you know, until children are being born there, right, or school is in session, it's not really a settlement. Will we live to see that? I expect to live to see that. I think that we will see that move happen in conjunction with some other big stuff that will be happening, especially another one I expect to live to see, which is the commercial exploitation of the solar system. In particular, we've talked about this numerous times over the last 6 months or so. Once we start mining the asteroids, once we're moving out into space and collecting resources from space, as soon as it becomes kind of the new frontier in that sense, you've got the gold rush going, that's when I think that, you know, we'll start building the little shanty towns out in space, and people will live there, and we'll have settlement of space. Another thing I expect to see happen, and this will be probably on the heels of the commercial exploitation of space, is the development of a viable system to prevent an asteroid strike of the Earth. This is
right.
One of the most important things we should be doing in space, or related to space, actually should be doing here on Earth, which is putting some kind of countermeasure in place that makes us immune from a big rock coming and wiping out all life on Earth. We've hit the reset button on this planet at least a couple of times. We certainly don't want it happening now that we've come so far into technological civilization and we're moving towards the singularity. It'd be a real shame if in the next decade or so that were to happen. There's no anticipation of that happening. No one sees a rock coming, but that's the problem. It's always the one you don't see. So that one is a high priority for us as a species and as a civilization and as an ecosystem. And I expect that as we kind of get our space legs, as we kind of develop these other competencies in space, we'll get that one in place because it's just so important. And then another one, we talk about this once in a while, I just expect it to happen because we're making so much progress in terms of tracking exoplanets, and we're getting a much better view of the universe than we've had up to this point, and we're getting more interesting ideas about what to look for. I think that we will discover life beyond Earth. So there you go. I expect to live to see all of those things happen. That's why I'm so excited about the future. I listen to all that cool stuff that's going to happen just in space, and I thoroughly expect to live to see all those things.
And I expect you to as well, Phil. I want to just throw in on this. Take the thing that I mentioned, the reduction of the price of material goods to the value of information, the energy, and the raw materials. Imagine how important that technology is, how much of an enabling technology that is for space. The ability to be able to manufacture what you need when you need it far from the commercial centers of Earth, that is an important enabling technology. We have to be able to do that, I think, in order to be able to have shanty towns. You know, if you're going to be out there, you know, and an emergency arises and you need a certain tool or a certain thing, you need to be able to produce it quickly where you are. And so that's an important thing. But it's more than that, though. I think that nanofactories are going to be practically essential to the building and maintenance of a space elevator. And
yes.
I expect a space elevator to be made of carbon nanotubes. It's a diamondoid material, carbon, all the way up. And I believe these carbon nanotubes will be produced by nanofactories. And, even diamondoid material is going to wear out, and especially the part of the space elevator that's within the elements, has to weather storms and things like that.
Yep.
You're just going to have to maintain it. Well, you're going to have crawlers crawling up and down the thing that are essentially nanofactories repairing this thing all the time. And
right.
Without that technology, I don't think we can maintain and keep a space elevator going. And space elevator is the technology, I think, that's going to make space real for most of us. The rocket rides are just too traumatic for most people to handle. They're too dangerous. They're too expensive. Whereas a general elevator ride into space, any of us can handle. And
I agree with that. However, I would say that the nanofactories, the atomically precise manufacturing, will make rockets a lot safer, a lot more reliable, and make the whole process less expensive and potentially safer as well. So I think you make an excellent point, which is that is a huge enabling technology for the exploitation of space. And in fact, as you know from reading Radical Abundance, that's what got Drexler interested in nanotechnology to begin with. He wasn't really interested in nanotechnology. He was interested in space, right? And he was thinking about solar sails and how can you produce something like that. And it occurred to him that you had to be able to work with atomic precision to make something that would really be viable as a solar sail. He wasn't even thinking of space elevators at the time. But by the time he worked on his master's thesis, he was talking all about the different kinds of applications that this technology would have for making it possible to truly exploit space. Good stuff. Awesome. Yeah. All right. I'm looking forward to those two things working together wonderfully well. And I don't know. Will we have a big enough 3D printer in our backyards that we can make our own moon rocket? I guess that's the question. You won't need it because we'll have a space elevator. Is that the?
That's right. You'll get in your auto drive car and say, take me to the nearest space elevator, and then you'll get on the space elevator and take a nice leisurely trip. It's something akin to riding a balloon or maybe on a cruise ship into space. That's, how gentle it'll be. And
right.
And it'll be beautiful, too. And, I think shielding is going to be a big is something that has to be considered because if you take a slow ride into space, there are places – on the way to space that would be kind of rough on you if you're not shielded properly. And, of course, I think that that's another thing that we can solve with molecular manufacturing. We'll be able to make things that are just simply not possible today. And we'll have materials technology that will allow us to protect ourselves much better.
Cool stuff. I think it's all stuff to be looked forward to. You just said something that kind of blew my mind, and I guess I haven't really thought about this. You said your nearest space elevator. That's right. There'll be more than one. I've only ever thought about
one. There won't be one. There'll be one briefly, and then one. Because I mean, think about it.
One of the great applications elevator. Of the space elevator is to make it easier to make new space elevators, right? For sure.
That's true. Yeah. And beyond that, it's just it'll be too valuable to. To just have one. There'll be many, many of them.
Right.
Now, they'll be
exactly.
Equatorial. Most of them will be at the equator or very close to it. You probably won't be able to get on a space elevator in Colorado, but your auto drive car will take you there. All right.
That's fine.
Airport.
Yeah. Take me down to Costa Rica or wherever it is.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, so what else? What else do you want to live to see, Stephen?
I'm going to start by giving kind of a little bit of a sad example of a difference in able-bodied people and people that have limitations. Had a blind uncle. He has passed on now. That shared with me once. We were just visiting, and I was, asking him about various things he was doing in his retirement. And he was saying that, travel is not something that blind people tend to do. They, the huge part of experiencing a new place is obviously being able to see it. And if you can't see it, then, one place
What's
is
the point?
As good as
yeah.
the next. Yeah, and he had gotten to where, his home he was familiar with. He knows exactly where everything was in his house. All his furniture, not going to trip over much. And he's got his music. He had audio books and various things that he did to keep busy. And the limitation, it made me appreciate, obviously, the gift of sight. And
right.
Here's the thing. We've got a new sense, a new thing that's been added, a technological overlay on our original six senses. our computer networks allow us to communicate with each other as if we have telepathy. You know, we're able to learn things as if we're surrounded by the best teachers in the world all the time. We can collaborate with people all over the world. We can plug in to networks of people. We can, you know, we can work with people. We can play. We can experience the world in ways that simply were not possible before. And I think we operate as if we're smarter people. Not as if. I guess I should stop saying as if. We are smarter people because of this. This allows us to, you know, I mean, you know, you unplug a person, you put them, you know, and you give them an IQ test. Maybe they're not any smarter than. But if you have benefit of all of this, then you are smarter. And you're able to do things that just simply were not before. So it's a new sense, and it's an important one too. I wouldn't give up vision for the internet. I wouldn't give up my sense of hearing or touch. But think about it, Phil. How important is the internet to you? If someone gave you this awful choice, you have to give up your sense of taste or the internet.
Oh man.
Which would you give up?
This is an ugly game of would you rather.
It's a real ugly game. I'd
give up my sense of taste. And I'll tell you what, I would at least say, okay, I'll probably lose some weight. Okay, at least that, you know, I'll get that.
Yeah, and you and me both, Phil, probably wouldn't be a bad thing. But I don't think that I would even blink, really. It's that important to us. It's important to what I do. In my livelihood, it's essential to my livelihood. The internet is essential to the fun things, many of the fun things I enjoy doing. It's just that important to me. And and some people say, you've got a problem, Stephen. You probably should join one of those, internet
12-step programs. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, or something. You know, I don't know if my life were not richer for, you know, that's the thing, you know, the thing that I would join a 12-step program is something that was robbing me of the richness of life. Okay.
Right.
If I've got a problem with alcohol, then it's robbing me of the joys of my family. It's doing all these terrible things to me. Now, there are people that get into the internet to the exclusion of family and friends and things, you know, and, but hey, if it's augmenting your ability to, if you text with a family member, you email a family member, you're plugged in through Facebook, and you know what's going on with distant family and friends that you would have lost contact with before, these things enrich you, you know. I would say it's, you got to be careful with stuff that it doesn't, you know, run away with your life. But if you're properly applied, the internet is a wonderful gift to us that we have now. And you know what? Here's the thing. Looking forward, this is a long way to get to my point. Looking forward, I believe we've only scratched the surface of what is possible and what it is that we will do with these networks that enable us to do so much more already. And so I guess what I'm saying is I'm hoping to live to see, live to do things that are not even imaginable now, because I'm plugged in with people that I would never have gotten to meet before. You know, we just are beginning to have the sort of translation technologies that allow us to have real-time conversations with people that whose language we don't speak. These sort of things get better and better, to the point that it won't matter, you know, that they speak some obscure language that I don't know, you know, that very few people know. You know, they can be as plugged into the world as everybody else, and the rest of the world is richer for that fact. That's the kind of future I'm looking forward to.
Absolutely. Well, I think we will live to see things we can't even imagine in terms of how people are going to interact with each other, how people are going to connect with each other, the things they're going to figure out to do together. Just because there's never been an opportunity to think of them before. Think of something as simple as Twitter, right? it blows my mind sometimes when I think about Twitter, because you look at it and you go, how could this ever have worked? How could this ever have caught on? why would anyone have ever thought of this? Why would anyone have ever participated in this? It was an absolute genius. Absolute genius,
yeah.
Twitter.
You and I were already blogging, Phil, when the Twitter thing hit, okay?
Yep.
We were already in the earliest stages of the speculust and beginning to think about, internet audio programs, because we had never heard the word podcast before. Yeah, we've been doing this a while, folks. I mean, this is we're not new to this game, okay? And Twitter hits. And I'm all like, what the heck is, this is stupid.
Well, 140 characters.
This?
I can't
compose a thought that rocks the world the way my blog posts do, and that
I could have gone on the speculum and written 140,000 characters. Yeah, exactly.
Well, that goes to show you what I knew. That was Twitter turns out to be in some ways more important than blogging, maybe because of the limitation that's put on space. If someone has some sort of wild idea, they can, they can compose it in a way that more people will read it because it's so short. It gets out there and it gets passed around and becomes it's really more there is a shorter lead time between having the idea and then getting out there and being, passed around because the fact is so short. So, Twitter, I didn't see it coming. And when I first saw it, I thought it was the stupidest thing I'd ever heard. And
Twitter is proof that we have no idea what cool things are coming. Okay, we can't imagine.
And when it arrives, we're going to probably be the old men.
We'll be the ones going, dumb. That'll never catch on. That's right.
Yeah,
and
get off my lawn,
Yeah, exactly. Just because this is a show about the future doesn't mean you should listen to us when it comes to that kind of thing. But let me go you one extra. I'm not going to say one better, okay, but one extra on this, because I have a category called the human experience, and I think it really ties in closely to what you're talking about. Swinging it back around to the idea of an extra sense. Well, in fact, assuming that the technology progresses at the rate that we're going, pretty soon the blind will be seeing, thanks to thanks to the internet or thanks to technology related to the internet. And then with the introduction of simuality, the technology we were talking about with our buddy Aurelian Carpathia a couple weeks ago, people will be able to see what's not actually there, or what's not there in the quote-unquote real world, what's there in the networked world. And suddenly our experience of that will become as vivid in terms of what we are bodily feeling, what we're sensing, as our experience of this world is. When you have as profound and, tactile and, all the senses working together experience of the networked world as you have of the actual world you're in, there's a parity there that says that the network world is going to win, because it's providing all this other stuff too. The objections that you just raised, that people do raise, that the people say, oh, you got a problem, you're too into this, are going to start to go away at that point, because we're going to live to see people having experiences as vivid, absolutely as vivid and real online as they have in the real world. And then we're going to see them having experiences, believe it or not, that are more vivid and more real than what they experience in the real world. Well, for one thing, it's entirely possible that simuality will be the technology that brings vision to the blind, right? I mean, if you can just pump visual information into somebody's head, it's like, well, here, we can give it to you from this feed, or, oh, we can give it to you from a camera, right? And now you can see what's going on around you.
I would say to you, Phil, that in addition to the simuality bringing vision to the blind, think of how important molecular manufacturing would be for
There you go.
For building something that would allow them to see. And think of all the geniuses throughout the world that are going to network to solve the problem of blindness. It's all tied together, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, under the same category I had, in addition to the introduction and widespread use of simuality, we also see brain augmentation. We're going to see replacement of human original hardware with new components, whether those will be organic or whether they'll be very finely crafted mechanical components. I can't tell you right now. We've had that discussion before, and it's really hard to say. I'll tell you this much, that the new parts we put in are going to work better and in new ways. They're going to work better than what we had before, and they're going to do things that what we had before wouldn't have been able to do anyway, including eyes, but probably improved optic nerves, too, and improved brains to process visual information. So
you know what
you're going to see this. Go ahead.
I was just thinking that an important milestone will be a point at which it becomes fairly regular for people to electively replace body parts that are perfectly healthy. With improvements, and obviously that is going to be a controversial thing, but
it will be less controversial. Do you agree? It will be less controversial if they're organic. You know what I mean?
I think what really makes it go away as far as controversial is if it's known and understood that what a person is doing is improvement, and improvement by, and not just a small bit, but by an order of magnitude. The new set of legs they're getting is an improvement in every way, you know. The new eyes that they get, not only do they not have to wear glasses, but their vision is beyond anything that humans have ever been able to experience before, because it's better than 20/20. By an order of magnitude.
That's persuasive to me, but I really think there are people who will be less persuaded if it's a robotic set of legs or a robotic new pair of eyes than if it's one that had been grown. You know what I mean? It's this whole natural versus what's not natural. But we digress.
Well, I think there's going to be some limitations to natural that at some point there'll be the artificial will be so much better than natural. We would be limiting ourselves by saying only this set of materials, the natural materials.
Oh yeah, I'm not arguing in favor of one or the other.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying that what people will object to.
I'm just saying that I think ultimately, the question you raised earlier was, will it be artificial or natural stuff that prevails? Maybe initially natural, upgraded natural stuff, but I think it'll reach a point that the artificial will be so much better because it won't have the same limitations, but eventually you go that way.
Have the two working so closely together that the categories don't mean anything, and they'll just say,
exactly.
Silly 21st century people, they thought that mattered, yeah. They thought that meant something.
Well, when you're working at the molecular level, like life does, that's what
it's right. It's to say it's not alive. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. It's real or Memorex? We don't know. We don't care anymore.
So we're going to live to see this vast expansion of human physical capability, human cognitive capability, just vast expansion of human capability, and we're going to see the replication of a human mind to a new substrate. I'm going to call that copying of a human mind to a new substrate. And then I think you're going to live to see, Stephen, transfer of conscious experience to a new substrate. And I am differentiating those two. In spite of the fact that most of my transhumanist friends will tell you that copying of a human mind to a new substrate is all you ever have to do. But we're not going to get into that whole, that's a can of worms.
Well, maybe I can throw in a couple of examples. The first would be me uploading myself to a computer, right?
Yep.
And hopefully, it's the old question: do I make the trip, or is it just a brand new Steven inside the computer that doesn't have any relation to the old Steven? It's a question that we've just gone over and over, and we're not the first, and we won't be the last to ponder that. But the other could be more like Total Recall, right? I mean, I strap myself to the chair and implant in myself the experience of having won an Olympic gold medal or something. You know,
right?
Is that what you mean? Actually, giving myself experiences that I've never really had.
Well, actually, I didn't mean that, although that's included under the idea of semiality. Here I'm talking more about taking conscious experience and moving not just my pattern, but my actual ongoing consciousness from one substrate to another. So we've talked about how this might be achieved by slowly replacing component parts until you've got a brain that has been replaced by digital parts one by one until you're in a completely in a completely new substrate. But I'm making a distinction there that not every transhumanist thinks is important even to make. To some of us it isn't, and I get accused of being a dualist. I don't really think I am. I think I'm just a I just don't buy patternism 100%. I think there's a time element to consciousness and a kind of an ongoing experience process element to consciousness that that you don't get by making a copy of something and sending it someplace else. If my consciousness is going to move someplace else.
By the way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I agree completely. There has to be a continuation or it's a new Stephen. If I step on the Star Trek transporter and they dematerialize my pattern, and then they assemble a new Steven with the same pattern, but none of the same, molecules at all. Then it seems to me they just built a new Steven on the surface of the planet. They didn't, and killed the one that was stepped onto the transporter. It seems to me that there needs to be a continuation.
Well, as I've said, maybe if it's quantum resolution on the transporter and they destroy all the quantum states of the existing one and recreate them there and it's, spooky distance, spooky action at a distance, maybe. Maybe you go. I don't know. But, like I said, it's a can of worms and we've got
exactly.
We have different fish to fry this evening. So we're gonna stick with things that we one thing I don't think we'll live to see is a resolution of the problem of consciousness. I think we'll be.
Well, may be true. That's the last big problem, I think.
Yeah, there'll be copies. There'll be transfers of consciousness. It'll all be going on. We still won't know what the heck it is, or what we're talking about here, and we'll still be debating. Well, as Ben Goertzel said a few weeks ago, these copies will be debating it, right? They'll carry on the debate for us as to whether they're really us and whether they're really conscious. Okay, so that's a couple. I had one more on the. Live to see side. I'm going to zip through it real fast because we want to get to the live to do side. And that was on the things. One other big area I expect to live to see is in artificial intelligence and information technology. The replacement of human drivers with robots in virtually all vehicles. Reliance on artificial intelligence for most routine medical procedures. We're going to see doctors essentially become robots. We'll see robotic dentists and surgeons. We'll go from robots doing the diagnosis to robots doing the actual somatic treatment on human bodies. Stephen, we'll see robotic lawyers even before then, as I'm sure you know. We'll see. And then it's going to go crazy, and I expect to live to see this, and it's going to be really fun to watch all this unfold. How about this? The first AI to hold political office or some position of authority. I expect to live to see that. And finally, today when the Supreme Court has handed down its ruling around DOMA, I think it's appropriate to say that we will live to see a controversy over human and robot marriage. I think that will come up. That will be a controversy, and it will be something that that we'll be dealing with here in, a decade or two, maybe 3 decades. But we will definitely be dealing with that issue. And all of that, I expect, within the next couple, 3 decades, I expect to live to see all those things.
Yeah. I'm just thinking of the AI that runs for political office. Imagine an AI running for president. What would its biography be? This AI was modeled on Abraham Lincoln with a touch of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. He grew up in a log cabin in the Singularity, and it's a strange world we're talking about. It really is, but. It's gonna be interesting, no doubt.
Yeah, he grew up in a log cabin and then didn't like that. So he grew up in New England, and then he didn't like that very much either. So he grew up on Mars, because let's face it, he's an AI. He can do all that if he wants to. Yeah, it will be strange. I have a feeling. I'll even make a prediction on this one that the first AI to hold political office will probably be an appointee, will not be elected.
You know, won't have to go through a campaign. We'll be appointed to some office, and that'll open the door. And then after that, they'll start running for office. But just to give a, you know, how much what we've seen before up to this point is going to be vastly expanded in the future. You know, we talk about how pervasive machines are and how intimate our relationship with them is, but that's, you know, that's still steps and steps away from the robots taking over, literally, when we start giving them political power, or from, you know, people feeling like they're married to the computer to someone who says, no, I actually do want to marry this cybernetic entity. You know, when those things occur, we're looking at a very different world, and probably very close to the singularity at that point. But I think we'll actually see all those things happen. Okay, Stephen, anything else on the live to see it side? We've got some living to do as well.
Well, I think we should just go to the do's because we're at the final 15 minutes mark. So let's get on and do.
All right. Well, you got one, or you want me to start?
You know what? I just threw this out to the family before I came up here to do the program, Phil. And Sherilyn says, okay, I know you guys mention it from time to time, but dang it, flying cars. I want to
do
that. That's something I want to do. I want to be able to get in my auto flying car and tell it to fly me someplace, and it just does so. And it's not airplane based. It's not a you know the wings fold out kind of thing. This thing has anti gravity and goes where I want it to go, and it's all automatic. So you don't have to be some sort of brilliant pilot to do it. And I said, okay, all right, that's what we want. And what do you think, Phil? Will she and will all of us live to see that?
I am speaking directly to Sherilyn right now. Sherilyn, you are going to live to see that. You're going to live to see it, and you're going to live to do it. And you know what? It's going to be a convergence, Stephen, of a lot of things we've been talking about here, because I think AI is a huge piece of it. I was talking about all the cars are going to be driven by robots, and as you just said, that's a big piece of what will enable that. I think that probably to have the kind of precision and the kind of just accuracy and safety built into a vehicle like this that we want, we're going to need the atomically precise manufacturing. I think a lot of these pieces will come together, and then, yes, we'll finally have true flying cars. So, yes, live to see it, live to do it. Sherilyn will be driving around in her flying car very soon. I'm not actually putting time frames on this, but we'll live to see it. That's the point. And since we don't know how long we're going to live, that gives us a little bit of breathing room, doesn't it?
Exactly. And you know, life extension is something we have not mentioned in the show at all. So
let me go there then.
Go ahead.
All right. Because on my things I will live to do, my first category there is health, and I expect to live to enjoy augmented vision and hearing, to enjoy augmented cognitive processes. I expect to live to run a 6-minute mile. I should have made that really ambitious, made it like a 3-minute mile is what I should have done. I expect to survive cancer. You know, I was thinking about things that people in the past couldn't expect to do in their future. And this is one we've talked about, the fact that ultimately I predict that cancer becomes this thing that people can kind of live with, like diabetes. And you know what? We're getting closer and closer to that, actually. We're seeing more and more of that. Just with the conventional treatments that are available for cancer, I don't want to get cancer, but I'm saying if I get it, I expect to survive. Go ahead.
Well, you know, if we live long enough, we'll get it, and
yeah.
And so it needs to be something that we're just so proficient at taking care of that it's no bigger of a concern than a little cut that you need a Band-Aid for. Have you seen the previews for the upcoming film Elysium? Have you?
I have, yes.
Caught that at all? You have not?
I have.
Okay. This imagines a future that has much in common with what we've been talking about. We're talking about a permanent settlement in space. People that are of advanced age that have beautiful 20-something bodies. Getting into a machine and it scans you and we found X number of cancer cells, and we've those have been eliminated. The only downside about that future is that the world's a mess, and that it's the haves that are in space, holding themselves separate from the have-nots that are starving and on the planet below. You know, that's in order to have an interesting sci-fi movie, you always have to have something like that. I don't think that the haves will be able to keep it. You know, if you're that wealthy and you have that, if things are that good, keeping it away from the rest of humanity is not going to be a possibility. It's if in an age of radical abundance, everybody wins. And
life extension is going to belong to the haves versus the have-nots in the same way, the exact same way that mobile phones belongs to the haves and the have-nots. Oh, oops.
The have-nots got
a hold of him. What happened? Oh my gosh! How'd that happen?
Oh yeah, the holy ploy got it. And oh my goodness! You know what do we do, Lovey? Anyway, it's a little
exactly.
Bit,
that's right.
It's a little bit like the guy on Wall Street, Gordon Gekko, walking along the beach with the brick in his hand. Oh my God! How cool is that?
That's what the haves will get first. They'll get the crappy version of life extension. By the time it's good, by the time it's a smartphone, everybody will have it. You know, the poor kids in Brazil will have it, right? I mean, it's just the way technology is unfolding. And I know they have to make the story that way in a movie, but that was the thing that disappointed me about that preview, was it was like, they're doing that, you know? Because at first you're watching, go, this is cool, and it's like, oh, that, come on. They have, but they have to do something, I suppose. Anyway, the last one on my help list was celebrate my 100th birthday. And actually, that's something that people increasingly do, but I think by the time I do it, I'll be something of a, well, not a, I, if I were 100 today, I'd be rare because of things I have had happen in my life. You know, I have at one point been very obese. I've had my gallbladder out. You know, I've had various things happen that would not indicate that a person's going to live to 100. But I think I will. I expect to do exactly that, and I expect to live probably well beyond my 100th birthday and probably not even run that six-minute mile at this rate until my 70s. You know, I don't think I'm going to be not going to be doing it this year or next year, that's for sure. So it's going to be a while before I do some of these things, but they're all coming down the pike rapidly. Okay, Stephen, quickly, what else are you going to live to do?
Live to do? Oh gosh, Phil. Can I punt just a second right back to you and come
for
back
sure.
to me in just a second? Yeah, I'm gonna play
okay.
off your
no
next
problem.
Thing. I go ahead.
Okay, well, because my next one is I want to I expect to augment my own cognitive abilities. These kind of tie
right.
to the things I expect to live to see with artificial components. I want to download new knowledge, which we haven't talked about before. But that's actually we sort of talked about it with the example from Total Recall. You know, it's not just experiences that you can pump into your head once you've got the interface between the brain and the machine. You can also put knowledge in your mind. And like in The Matrix, where you just look up the program and suddenly you can do kung fu.
I know.
We'll be able to, take on expertise and know things that we couldn't know before. I expect to develop a personal relationship with one or more AIs, you know, be able to say some of my best friends are robots. And I believe I will live to do this, transfer my consciousness to a new substrate. I believe that at some point, the set of subjective experiences that I call Phil Bauermaster will move from an organic brain to some other substrate. And
I predict, Phil, that you'll do it slowly so that you actually make the trip.
Yes. If I don't make the trip, I don't care. I wouldn't even call it transferring my consciousness at that point. It's just copying otherwise, yeah. I agree. Okay, Stephen, you got another one?
Okay, well, gosh, you're covering it so well, Phil, with the augments. I mean, that's really it. When the cost of knowledge is, you no longer have to spend, think of what it takes in dedication to gain the knowledge of a kung fu master now, okay? How many years of your life would you have to spend to do it? And of course, you'd also have to have the physical body to be able to do it. You know, to be able
right.
to take the beating to do it. But what if you don't have that, but you still want the knowledge? I think that'll be available to people, and that, you know, I think there'll be some people that that look at that and go, you know, that's cheating. But to the extent that we're all enriched by it, who cares if it's cheating or not? You know, you mentioned, Phil, you'll be able to say some of my best friends are robots. That got me thinking, the humorous thing, that's what people that I have a problem with robots will say. They're a robot racist. Well, you know, that's not true.
Hey, some of my best friends are robots. I talk to Siri all the time. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. I don't really have a problem with robots.
I just wouldn't want one marrying my daughter. Yeah, that's
exactly. That, to me, that'll be a milestone, because you know what that will mean? That will mean that you don't want to be identified as a robot racist.
That's right.
You know, you might be a robot racist and hold those feelings in your heart, but you don't want the world thinking you have those feelings, because the world has changed to the point that most of the people in the world understand that that's not the way you want to be. And
right.
I think that will be an interesting milestone when you hear people talking like that. You know, some of my best friends are robots. I don't have a problem with robots.
When you hear people saying that, you'll know we've really crossed into a new world. Absolutely. Yeah, I agree.
Exactly.
Okay, finally, life experiences. I expect to do the following. I'm going to build and spend a significant amount of time in a world of my own design. That's one of the great things about Simuality is we'll get to kind of choose what we experience subjectively. And then I just thought of a couple, like, okay, if I'm going to be this vastly capable being, what am I going to do? I'm going to compose and perform music. I'm going to design and build my own yacht. And, you know, I thought of that just because I can't imagine how I would even go about doing something like that. But I'd like to have a big boat. So, yes, I expect one day I'm going to have the capability. I'm going to have the resources available. It's kind of tying together everything we talked about. And I'm going to build this huge, beautiful boat. And I'll probably just live on it. But mostly be in Simuality. But still, I'll have this boat. That's going to be pretty cool. I'm going to travel in space. I'm going to attend my great-great-grandchildren's weddings, if they know who I am and are interested in my being there, because that's going to be one of the interesting little unexpected consequences of life extension, is we'll become farther removed from relatives just across generations. How you don't really know your fifth cousins? Well, you might not know your great-great-great-great-grandparents or great-great-great-great-grandchildren just because you tend to stay in touch more with people that are a little bit closer. And I expect to transfer my consciousness to a replacement body. Since I've already talked about moving it to a new substrate, that's kind of the same idea. But I expect to do all those things. All right. Stephen, any final things you expect to do?
I would expect to do all those things, and I would expect to be surprised. You know, all the awesome things that we've talked about tonight, I expect for it to sound naive to the ears of someone who makes it that far. I think there'll be, and what I mean by it is that not naive in the sense that, oh my gosh, were they ever overshooting? I'm talking naive in the sense that we were undershooting.
That we didn't think
world,
of enough, absolutely.
We just didn't think of enough. There was the universe turns out to be richer than we ever imagined.
When I agree. When I came up with things I will live to be, I tried to push beyond that envelope, because I could have said space traveler, could have said sexy mortal billionaire with superpowers. Instead, I'm going to leave it with this. I'm going to live to be a time traveler. Whoa. Conceptual. Okay. There you go. I'm not going to even try to justify it, because we're out of time. Stephen, what is our music this evening?
Our music this evening is the song Over It by Kevin Anthony.
Kevin Anthony singing Over It. Thank you all for being with us. Special thanks to Ken, pulling down great duty there in the chat room this evening. Great being with you all. We'll be back again next week on Tuesday night for our special 4th of July program, talking about the Declaration of Singularity. Look forward to being with you all then. And until next time, live to see it.
And if you can't keep it real, I drinking just a little too much. You say you haven't changed, but don't keep your word. I'm the one that truly cares, but you're quick to hurt. You don't have any actions to prove your side. Second guessing me, and it's just a televised. I know you're making time for him, but not me.
Oh, I know.
But I'm over.